All right, take one. Today, as is being recorded, Manchester City and Liverpool are going to face off in the Premier League. Two of the biggest clubs in England, two clubs that in the last 2 years finished 1 and 2 in the standings. It's a rivalry, what you would call. And one that you can say is majorly important for one of the linchpins, one of the talismans of the Manchester City attack. Raheem Sterling.
Sterling. He's done well, Sterling. And that is a penalty. 25th minute of the game. And Kevin De Bruyne tucks it into the net. And City lead. Kevin De Bruyne is becoming City's Mr. Reliable from the spot. Now a chance for City on the counter-attack here. Phil Foden. Sterling, and still, it's 2! Raheem Sterling!
Yesterday, another one of England's star players, Marcus Rashford, has helped his team beat the other scrappy team from Liverpool, Everton. In a week from now, Rashford, along with Sterling, as well as many of England's stars like Harry Kane and Jadon Sancho, are going to play together on their path to try to win England's first World Cup victory since 1966. A lot is riding on these young players to bring back glory not only for their country, but for the soccer-mad England fans who have not seen glory in a long, long time. As well, they're there to bring glory to their town and club. Because not only are these players expected to do well, they're expected to be exceptional. Yet for some players, the road to being a loved superstar is paved with hardship. And for others, the hardship never stops. So this is the story of the young players of England, which is a mirror to the young men of England, which is the mirror to the young sports-loving men of the world. And ask them, who is your enemy and who is your prodigal son? This is Modern Manhood. Modern Manhood is brought to you by Next Gen Men and the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. If you want to support Next Gen Men in redefining and undefining what it means to be a man, you can head on over to nextgenmen.ca. Your contributions support the promotion of positive masculinities, healthy relationships, and gender equity among the next generation of men. Again, head on over to nextgenmen.ca. Got some cool stuff in coming for Christmas time. We still have some cards for masculinity cards, and we'll have some cool little swags as well. Christmas is always important for nonprofit organizations, so any support you give us along the way would help us a ton. So that's over at nextgenmen.ca. This episode of Modern Manhood is brought to you by The Shared Mic. Can you remember the last time you spoke to someone from a totally different generation who wasn't a member of your family? There is so much we can learn from listening to people both younger and older than ourselves. The Shared Mic Conversations for the Ages is a unique interview format intergenerational podcast by Age Friendly Edmonton, bringing together people from different ages and backgrounds to discuss topics that matter to them. Season 2 is out now and features conversations about cultivating friendships, building careers, exploring virtual theater, volunteerism, and much more. Find The Shared Mic on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. The Shared Mic is brought to you by the Edmonton Seniors Coordinating Council and the City of Edmonton. It may be cliche to say by now, but we are really living in unprecedented times. That's why you should consider hiring a chartered professional accountant, also known as a CPA, to help you guide you through this pandemic and jumpstart your recovery. With a CPA on your team, you can be confident you will find the best solutions to even your biggest business problems. CPAs are trained to dig in and truly understand how an organization operates, where it's already excelling, and how it can be better. For an inside look at how Alberta CPAs are supporting their clients through the pandemic, follow CPA Alberta on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. You can also visit cpaalberta.ca to find out more. Today, I'm going to talk about one of my true, real loves of mine, soccer, or football, or football, is how I used to call it. A sport that has not only been a significant part of my life, and still is to this day, it's a sport that inspires a lot of passion from millions and millions of people worldwide. It's the most popular game on earth. For myself, I have very specific memories of sporting events that have caused me joy, grief, or any kind of excitement. And a lot of them have to do with soccer. Like, for example, I specifically remember Michael Owen's amazing game against Argentina. I think it was in the 1998 World Cup. And as well with Zinedine Zidane and Thierry Henry beating Ronaldo and that amazing Brazil team in 98 as well. And one of my favorite recent memories have been the two times Chile has won the Copa America against Messi's Argentina in dramatic fashion.
Acá está Alexis. Alexis y la Copa América. Alexis le pegó. Chile campeón. Chile campeón. Chile campeón. Chile campeón de Copa América. En un partido dramático. En una tarde sufrida. No podía ser de otra forma. Dejamos atrás 100 años de lágrima. Dejamos atrás 100 años.
What a night. And I knew that for this conversation, I need to find someone who understands that passion. And because I was going to talk about English football in particularly, someone from the UK. And luckily, I knew just the man.
I was born in Dumfries, Scotland. Queen of the South is our home football team. But I didn't
Queen
really
of
support
the South?
Them. Queen of the South, not the best name, really. It doesn't inspire fear or confidence.
Now, I have known Scott for a while now. He was the one who introduced me to Fantasy Premier League, the fantasy game that surrounds English football. And I've had many conversations with him about FPL. And I also knew that an expat from the UK would have some great comments and some great ideas about the current game as it is right now.
My dad and I both realized that we quite liked football. We quite liked Dad had obviously had years of watching it, and I didn't dislike watching it, but it just wasn't, again, I didn't move in that crowd. So when we came here, we realized that it was TSN,
the rights at the time.
They started having like the occasional like Manchester United versus like Arsenal or like actually these big games, which, and obviously being in Scotland, I guess to backtrack slightly, you didn't watch English Premier League. You didn't because, you've got the Scottish Premier League. You don't care nothing about that English football, even though it is hands down, England is a better quality product. It does not matter. You didn't do that because of, you just didn't. So that was I never, obviously you're aware of teams like Manchester United and Arsenal, especially in the 90s, the early 2000s being, and obviously the rise of Chelsea with the money injected. So you saw them in Champions League games when Rangers played Manchester or played Barcelona even. Right. Like that was your exposure to arguably good football. Although in the 90s, the Rangers weren't terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
But that was their exposure to it. So when we came to Canada, and you could actually, you just turn on a sports channel and you see Manchester United versus Arsenal. It's kind of like, we have this opportunity here where we don't have to pretend not to enjoy this. We don't have to necessarily pick a team that we want to back. And we can actually just kind of enjoy this as a spectacle. Mm-hmm. And the few people we did find when we came here that actually did watch the English Premier League, watch soccer in general, were just thrilled that you watched it. They didn't care who you supported or to what extent you supported. They were just thrilled to have someone to talk about. So over the years, like over the decade plus of us being here and seeing that, We grew and started. Knight and I kind of grew into picking teams we wanted to support. And like at the time, the kind of mid to late 2000s, like Tottenham Hotspur were doing pretty well. They were the plucky underdog. They had players like Luka Modric. They had Gareth Bale. They had Van der Vaart. We had Dimitar Berbatov for a period as well. So there was like a lot of things to really like about Spurs in that period. Peter Crouch, Jermaine Defoe, Harry Redknapp as a character, as a manager. So that was a team we gravitated towards, because even though we were kind of free to pick whichever team we wanted, it still felt wrong to pick a Manchester United Arsenal or those big teams you'd always known had been very well established and had won a lot of things in recent memory. So it was more fun to support the underdog.
Scott also has a unique perspective because he went to school in Scotland and therefore understood what it means to be a, quote, football boy.
The best way to describe football boys in a North American context is it's the closest you'd get to jocks, really. That's kind of what it would be. There was this certain level of all the girls love them. They get all the special treatment from teachers. They get to go off on these trips and things that you don't get to go on. That's the best way truly to put it. Like that's, and it still didn't feel quite as, especially at the time, like my only reference point for what a jock was like some American TV that had made it over. So it never felt quite that extreme. They weren't all exactly like standing by the lockers wearing leather jackets or whatever. Like
push you into a locker.
Yeah, exactly. It was never quite that, but there was a certain like, oh, these are popular people, I guess. Like it did that equated to a lot to popularity because football being such a major thing. Yeah, that was definitely if you were one of the football players playing for the school, you were that person. And then there was always then talk of, because again, football being so huge, it was like, oh, did you hear such and such got like an amateur contract with like whatever, and they're like, oh, Queen of the South, oh yeah, they actually signed Ross is playing for Queen of the South and stuff like this, like, oh, I think he's really got a future, like, so that they became the popular kids, and that's kind of how it was. So I just didn't move in that crowd because I never had played football and didn't have a natural innate ability to play football. So that's just, I never ended up in that world. I just observed that world from a distance.
So were those kids, that they come from a different like class structure than other kids? Or was it like, did you have to be some sort of like rich person to play it, I guess is my question?
No, honestly, I think it was the vast majority of the kids that fell into that camp were kids that I would say were from the rougher part of the town where I was from, actually. The vast majority of the kids that were in the picked for or got like contracts with or amateur contracts with or were rumored to have amateur contracts with that kind of thing were very, very rarely kids that I would describe as well-to-do. Now, I know we spoke before about how, like, you know, the use of school uniforms and things made it kind of harder to very quickly go, oh, such and such is clearly wealthy or they've got a nice car, that, you know, things. It was harder to discern that. But I know, having been friends with one or two of the ones, like, at the time I wasn't all that aware, but looking back, they were definitely not affluent families. Like, these kids, like, they were just very good at football. And I think that also speaks to the accessibility of football as a sport.
Yeah. So as much as there is similarities with jock culture, there is with football boys, the same cannot be said of some of the sports and where they come from. Class backgrounds from a lot of world famous players in soccer have come from humble beginnings. It's in fact one of the most typical stories in football. One that was told from people like a world talent like Diego Maradona, all the way to another modern world talent like Cristiano Ronaldo. The dream of having a young, skilled boy go play to the local famous football club is seen as almost like a lottery ticket in England. Much so like a lottery ticket would be if you raised a good hockey player in Canada. But the barrier of entry is much lower than you would see as somebody in hockey. And you can see it definitely with the players who go on to play for their local club and thrive there.
You mentioned a lot of good, like prominent world football superstars that exist in there, but none of them have a story of like, oh, I had a total stable, normal family life, and you know, I had all three square meals a day, and I went to the best school, and it's just all lined up for me. Like that's, obviously, inevitably,
there's got to be
a story in there, but that doesn't seem to be the common story, I think football fans in the broadest sense actually like that about their football players, because especially in England, I don't know. I think football generally, it's kind of touted as the working men's kind of sport.
Yeah.
So if you were to all of a sudden take the working men's sport and then have it be totally played and dominated by people that are ultimately kind of unrelatable to the people that support and championing it, I don't think it would have its success or the support that it has. Like, there's, look at people like Trent Alexander-Arnold in Liverpool. The love for him because he's from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many people rally behind him, and there's a reason his face is like across, I think, multiple different buildings at this point in Liverpool. And they've gone on to win things with him and the team, and being a young guy from Liverpool, playing for Liverpool, being very successful, arguably one of the best fullbacks in the world in current footballing terms. Like that. So to see like a working class guy, not an affluent man, not from what I understand of his upbringing. So that, I think people rally around that. Fans rally around that. It's like, yes, this is what we're about. This is our boy.
Yeah,
and they love that, right?
Yeah.
Raheem Sterling was that man as well.
Sterling, fans responding in volume tonight. De Bruyne to Sterling. Sterling on the right foot with a curl. That's in the corner. What a start from City. It's exactly what we needed here tonight. Sterling breaks the deadlock. Not even 4 minutes gone. Dream start for City. Sterling kick too quickly. De Bruyne on the overlap. Wicked ball to the back post. And Sterling has his second. And City go ahead. 3-2. Sterling once again stealing in behind Trippier. And we have a classic on our hands here. And City, one goal for goal.
Raheem Shaquille Sterling was born in Jamaica and moved to London at the age of 5. An English immigrant whose father was murdered when he was 2 years of age. Raheem's mother, who was an athlete herself, knew that her son had skills, but because Raheem had already gotten into trouble with disciplinary problems in school, she didn't want him to sign for a London club to avoid the London gang culture. So he signed for Liverpool. Raheem's mother and sister was a big influence on him. Here he is talking to the BBC about his family.
Trust is a massive thing, and for me, that's the most important thing in my life, having people around you that you trust. Not everyone that you see that laughs and smiles with you is your friend. Not everyone that you see around you means you well. From a young child, that's been my number one message from my mum. My mum's principles were always there for each other. You can get through anything. My sister, she was just a child herself, and she had that much responsibility on herself. Knowing that mom had to go to work, sometimes she had to take me to training. I can never look back now and think of one time of her complaining. She always went out of her way, and I'm grateful for her doing that. If my mom or my sister ever see me trying to get too out of place, they'll knock me right back down to earth. 14, 15, 16, say a bit of 17. So confident. Then there was a gap between 17 and 20. I don't know what happened to me. I became a softie, you know? The first time I've ever become a professional and first time experiencing certain stuff.
And even in this heartwarming clip of him talking about his family, you can sense the bit of defensiveness and guard that life in London has given him. This was put to the test when Raheem took his extraordinary talents away from Liverpool to sign for Manchester City.
I just think I was so used to people talking so positive about me in terms of football. At 15, being bought by Liverpool and playing for the first team so young, everything was so nice. But then it was just a switch where I just left and it was, oh, he's not good again. I didn't play for City yet, but oh, he was not good again. He'll never be what he thinks he's going to be. It wasn't just fans, it was like professional players that you look up to, that you watched on telly when you were a kid, to hear them like, right, you off, and now I get it. But at the time, it was a bit hard for me to take. After a while, you realise that it's nothing personal. It's just people doing their jobs, and you've got to be professional and you've got to behave correctly.
Definitely resentment. I remember this story in the sense of like, there was a lot of bitterness in regards to Liverpool fans, and there was a lot of bitterness because not because so much that the people wanted him to stay, was of that he wanted to leave.
Yes, I think so. I think there was a lot of people who were like, what do you mean you want to leave Liverpool Football Club? This is my football club. Yeah. This is a big team. This is, we've won the Champions League and you want to leave us. Especially, I think, because Man City, I believe, hadn't really won anything at all at that point.
Yeah.
It was seen as being very, very mercenary, where you were leaving for more money. Liverpool had only just not won the title, so it's like, we're so close, we're just there. Exactly. You're about to go join Manchester City, who are not even a name in this space at this point, right? Like, so you're gonna make this very lateral move, which seems to be just for money. Fine, go be a spoiled kid.
That's exactly.
Go be a spoiled kid and go get your money. We don't need you. And obviously that was a sentiment of a lot of Liverpool players. But obviously I think that sticks. That kind of, that mud sticks. So a lot of that was just kind of became his tag of like, he left to go make his money. He was, you know, ungrateful for what Liverpool had, the chance they'd afforded him. Even though that season Sterling had did a ton of work for them. I think he had a ton of goals and a ton of assists. It's like, well, I don't think he owed anything. He did all he could to try and put Liverpool in the position they were in. So I don't know, you know, he made a move at that time where now in hindsight ultimately seems to have been the best move, because obviously when he moved to Manchester City, him and Man City have just gone from strength to strength to strength in terms of winning league titles, FA Cup, League Cup titles, not got the Champions League yet, but strong runs in Europe. So he has won a lot more things having left Liverpool and gone on to have a very good career there, and still having a good career, and arguably is one of the best players in that team that is full of world superstars of football.
If you're a sports fan, this story is as old as time. A popular young player, or even just any type of popular player, leaves to go somewhere else, and then usually he is tarnished for life from that fan base. Hell, I remember when that affected me. I remember that when the all-world defenseman Chris Pronger asked to be traded from the Edmonton Oilers in hockey, a wound that many Oilers fans have yet to mend, and which also ended in a lot of bitter and terrible words and actions done by Oilers fans to the Pronger family. With Raheem Sterling and his story, it's a story that continues to this day. It's also compounded because he is an ex-player. Here's Scott explaining it.
And that concept of being more homegrown, I think in England for sure, extends to being English as well. Like,
that's the thing too. Yeah.
The English media does love to big up English players that are good football players, but they are not what the media especially would make them out to be. But English fans, who doesn't love an English player being successful in a big team in England? It's kind of a national level, that's our boy example of that is Harry Maguire. Like, I think he's still currently, at time of recording, the most expensive defender ever bought for pounds sterling, and so playing for Man U. And anyone who really watches him is like, yeah, okay, there's a good centre back there, but he's not that I think most people could name better current centre backs in world football, right? But it's that English premium that Man U had to pay to have the best English player, and then the media bigs and hypes it up, which I can only imagine what kind of pressure that puts on English players to be perfect, to be the best they possibly can be, when they themselves are just good. There's nothing wrong with just being good, but when the media says they should be exceptional, is when there must be an issue.
It's a weird complex.
I don't know how you'd reconcile that necessarily. It's like, you're playing as well as you can, but for some reason people seem to think you should be
better
and flawless, when that's never been part of who you are, and probably nor any player is flawless.
Across Manchester, another young English star is turning heads. Local boy Marcus Rashford. Marcus Rashford exploded onto the scene in 2015. It has not looked back since. He's the Manchester boy.
Yep. Came through their academy.
Teenager,
I started as a teenager, first game, like, lighted up.
Rose to prominence in a time where Manchester United were struggling.
Yeah.
And did very well, hit the ground running, and was very good at what he did.
And there's Rashford trying to embroider it. He's done it. He has done it. No wonder it's high there when it comes to international interest. A rasper from Rashford. Changed the game at Crystal Palace on Monday, and he started today and got Manchester United off on the right foot with his right foot.
So you basically, you're creating the hallmarks of what the media would have you believe is like some sort of living legend. And don't get me wrong, he is a very good football player, and he is still quite young. He is young. He's not quite young. He is young. But as soon as you just kind of, like, when you arrive on the scene and just, like, the perfect way, and in his case, at the perfect time, you're just shot to superstardom. And he's playing in a team with players that are arguably on paper better than him, that are more expensive than him. But he's the English guy.
Yeah.
Playing for Man U on the attacking end of the field, exactly. Getting the results, bringing it home, getting them through beating PSG in that comeback Champions League game, with those, like, taking his first penalty, and it's like, oh my goodness, so, like, his stock has just skyrocketed as far as the British media, at the very least, is concerned.
Yeah.
Rashford, born in Manchester and of Kittian descent, from a poor family, and yet still had the opportunity to help out even as a youth. He and their family would go to the island of St. Kitts to visit and also to help out with the homeless shelters there. This type of activism and charity work was not forgotten from Rashford, as in October of 2019, he set up the In the Box campaign from Selfridges to give homeless people essential items over the Christmas period. Something he had wanted to do when the first training with United as a youth. This year, he made headlines by publicly advocating and pushing the government to give children free lunchbox meals, and personally raised £20 million for the cause during the lockdowns in between the pandemic.
You know, my mum, she'd done the best she could. I remember we used to go to a shop called Pound World, and everything was under a pound, and, you know, we sort of schedule out the week, so we'd get 7 yogurts and you can have 1 yogurt a day, and this is all going on at a time where kids should be concentrating on schoolwork, and it's just crazy to think that this is still going on at this, you know, we're in 2020 now, and it's just something that I don't believe should be happening.
Marcus Rashford grew up in Wythenshawe on what was once thought to be the largest council estate in Europe. He went to this primary school.
He's a real hero to our children.
Where the number of children receiving free school meals is twice the national average.
Families may have unemployment that's come as a result of COVID-19. They may well be on reduced hours. So, you know, financially there's been a strain. So what Marcus is saying is, you know, really quite a small ask, I think.
In the local shopping precinct, I met Gemma. Both her children are among the 1.3 million youngsters in England who receive free school meals. She says keeping them fed is a constant struggle.
Try living our life for a week. It's not fun. Because I wish we all knew where we're next going to get shopping or what's going to happen.
Whether in work or out of work, families here are feeling the pressure. The government has confirmed that the national voucher scheme will not run this summer, but says £63 million has been allocated to local authorities to help those who are struggling. Marcus Rashford hopes the government will change its mind and find what's believed to be around £120 million to fund the voucher scheme over the summer holidays.
Well, basically, I'm just hoping that the government make a U-turn on the decision to stop the free meal vouchers, and I'm just hoping they do it as soon as possible, really. I know they've mentioned that they usually do this you know, this time of year, summer holidays, but because of COVID, the situation's been completely different for everyone in the world, so, you know, circumstances change, so I think they have to be willing to make that decision to go back on themselves.
Rashford has been claimed a hero in England, not only with Manchester United, but with many other soccer clubs. Many of them have shown their support, have been vocal about it, and even spoken about it in person and saying how proud they are of Marcus Rashford. And so many players are backing his cause. So much was the pushback to government for stopping the free food vouchers that the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, had to step in. And today, on November 7th, Rashford mentioned that he is speaking with the Prime Minister to try to make it happen. Now, Rashford, the English lad, who is playing for his childhood team, being a star, and also helping his community, is a player that right now is bulletproof. But I wonder how long that's going to last. And yet, when Raheem Sterling, an English star playing for an English team, who has won many trophies, unlike Rashford, speaks out, he is directed with abuse. In October 2020, a Professional Football Association report showed that 43% of players experienced targeted and explicit racism online, with half of these abuse directed at three players who spoke out about the issue during Project Restart: Sterling, Adebayo Akinfenwa, and Wilfred Saha. Now, the issue during Project Restart was asking, should we be playing in the pandemic? And these three players were vocal about not doing that. Yet, they were the ones who were directed racist abuse from fans. In total, more than 3,000 abusive messages were sent to the 44 players in the study over the 6 weeks Project Restart period. Sterling, before this report, has not only targeted racist fans through his social media work and through some celebrations that he's done mocking the racist chants that he's been getting, but also has targeted the media that has spurned this as well.
You're changing attitudes in some respects by speaking out, and that's been important to you, hasn't it?
You know, you can't kind of hear the talk of, you know, leading this fight, and I don't see it like that. I've been told as a child, the only time you really hear the truth from, not the truth, but you really get the real Raheem is when he's angry. That's when he starts talking up his mind, and, you know, certain situations this year have, you know, brought that out into me, and I just thought I had to, you know, share light, not really try to lead anything. I didn't, you know, when I done that post, it wasn't to try and lead it, it was just to make people see it from my point of view and sometimes some of the other players' point of view.
What do you think of the current anti-racism campaigns?
The Kick It Out t-shirt and the Kick It Out campaign, like, you know, something that growing up, you know, I've always been easygoing with, and to put the shirt on and everything. But sometimes, you know, you do sit there and think, do I really want to put this t-shirt on? We need to push it more than how I think we are pushing it.
Does it take somebody to walk off a pitch?
You know, as I said, people take it in a different way. People take it different ways, take it more emotionally than some. You know, I don't personally feel to walk off a pitch is the right thing, because at the end of the day, we are footballers. My mum's always told me I'm a black king. She's always told me to be comfortable with my body and to be comfortable with my skin colour. And, you know, for someone to tell me I'm black, like that, you got to do more than that for it to actually, you know, hurt me and break me, to be honest with you. I would be one of the ones to say, no, we're not going to walk off the pitch. We're going to stay and win the game and, you know, and tell them to do one. Simple as that.
Sterling talks about this kind of casually and kind of takes it in stride, you know, mentioning how he didn't want to walk off, or that it's just something that just popped into his head and he didn't really think twice about saying it. He just wanted to let it out. But it caused a big deal in English media and also caused other players to speak out about it. And also it caused a sort of solidarity and unity movement inside the players. But that doesn't give Sterling any slack from the public or the media as well. Because the Scott reminds us of an infamous media story that surrounded Raheem Sterling.
Reminders, like one of the bigger reminders in recent times was Sterling got a tattoo of a gun on, I think it's his right calf. Mm-hmm. And this was around the time of the last World Cup. And the media had a field day with that because that was inciting gun violence. And there was, you know, the standard going out and talking to concerned women's and groups
of course,
like,
right?
Oh, this is terrible. He should have it lasered off and all of these kinds of ridiculous things. So it's like, we can point to many, many sports personalities that have tons and tons of tattoos that could arguably be considered.
Absolutely.
And I've done, putting even tattoos aside, their personal behavior, like mm-hmm. public, the thing. Yeah, there's plenty of sports personalities that exist that, and footballers, English footballers,
absolutely.
That have done far worse things than get a tattoo. And, yeah. But no, they were so quick to just, oh yeah, no, look, here's, you know, you're still in at it again. Here's this kid who's just ungrateful, and you know he's got this swagger and cockiness about him as well. Because he's a confident guy. Like there doesn't seem to be a lack of confidence
Absolutely.
To him. So I think tabloids dislike that as well. I also think that makes you a great target to try and tear down, because oh, take that, you know, it's to bring someone like that who has confidence and mm-hmm. talent and money and fame and success as well at a club level. So to try and bring that person down is like the best thing you could do from a tabloid, a click. So
what's the difference between somebody like Marcus Rashford and then someone like Raheem Sterling? Two young black men, one from Manchester, one from London, working class backgrounds. Both were either an immigrant or they came from immigrant families. And both have come from humbling backgrounds. And both are big stars in the Premier League. And for Sterling specifically, he is considered one of the best players England has right now. Now, I'm not a black man, but I have definitely heard of the title of the right black man or the model minority. You know, you have to be a specific type of black man for someone to like you. And Marcus Rashford, to no fault of his own, is that type of black man. Raheem Sterling, on the other hand, is not. He's considered uncouth. He's considered kind of a gangster. And that's why, through, again, no fault of his own, these kind of stories pop up. Also, I don't understand why, the life of me, Raheem Sterling does not get the same respect as someone like Rashford gets. As well, and Scott makes the same comparison between Raheem Sterling and another of his English compatriots, Harry Kane, who have also have come up around the same time.
Like, the achievements that he's done compared to somebody, like Trent Alexander-Arnold
mm-hmm.
has a young player, obviously, but at the same time, like, he, because they won in Liverpool and they won the Champions League and they won the title, even though, you know, they haven't won in ages, he has risen above into being like, wow, this kid's going to be a star, is actually a world talent.
Oh, yeah.
And Raheem Sterling, who has won,
He's been a world talent for a number of years, but we don't talk about
him. How many Premier League championships is he? Like,
oh,
three?
He's at least three. At least three.
Yeah. So he's won three of them, but no one talks about it, him being like one of the best, if not top five English players in the modern era. Right, I don't hear that. Maybe because I'm in Canada, but I don't hear that conversation so much. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. I think actually a really far more interesting comparison to make, because I mentioned it earlier on, the two actual world class English players that I think exist are Raheem Sterling and Harry Kane.
Yeah,
Harry Kane plays for Tottenham Hotspur. He is a brilliant, brilliant striker. He is the reason that team has even made it to a Champions League final.
Yeah.
He is the reason that team has made it into Champions League, period. He's the reason that anyone actually knows who Spurs are. He's actually, in a strange roundabout, he's arguably the reason that Jose Mourinho is actually at Spurs.
Sure.
Because he's dragged them up. And I really feel that Kane has dragged them being Spurs into the limelight somewhat to mm-hmm. legitimize them as a team that you could maybe even pretend, you know, not quite seriously, that they could win the league,
yeah.
as it were. And his scoring numbers are brilliant. His I think he just scored 200 club goals for Spurs earlier in the week here, so that's brilliant. He's the captain of England. He's this great guy. But he, as a professional, short of personal accolades of things like golden boots for the most mm-hmm. goals scored and things, club and country has won nothing.
Yeah.
He's never won the league. He's never won a League Cup. He's never won an FA Cup.
Yeah.
He's never won a European trophy. He's never won a World Cup. Meanwhile, Raheem Sterling sits over here with his at least three Champions League, an FA Cup, at least two League Cups.
Right.
And that's just the things I can remember and know about as well. But Harry Kane's over here. Look at Harry Kane. He's brilliant. Yes, and he scores goals. Goals will always be valued as like the ultimate big output of football. So strikers are always going to be favoured in things as well. But like, great, and I like Harry Kane. I think he's a very relatable, nice guy as well.
That's the thing, he's a nice guy.
But exactly, you touched on it. Nice, like, guy. Harry Kane is a very nice, relatable bloke that it just totally works to make this the face of English football at a national level, and it helps that he is very, very good at what he does.
Very good.
But then you just can leave Sterling out here in the cold. It doesn't really matter. He has achieved, in a footballing sense, so much more, and arguably more than Harry Kane ever will actually achieve as a footballer.
Absolutely.
But he does not receive... Kane is almost kind of universally liked by a lot of English... Like, again, we talked about the teams and the divides that exist. Kane is universally liked by pretty much everyone in England. Like, okay, you can, Arsenal fans won't love him, but at the same time, as soon as he puts on that England shirt, even before he puts on the England shirt, I think people will be like, okay, he's kind of
like, I get it. It's people understand why he's good. I think it's more so like that. It's not that they don't like him. It's like they're kind of like jealous. They're like, they're just a little bit of envy, and they're a little bit like, damn, this guy's, I can't even hate him. Like, it's one of those things.
No, you're totally right. He has. It's funny. He gets actually a ton of stick for it, for him having a speech impediment, right?
Yeah.
So when he does media interviews, he has a speech impediment. But so many people come to defend him, because inevitably you get Twitter trolls and social media trolls that just, you know, mock him for that. But people come to his defense so readily. These are non-Spurs fans as well, because it just adds to his relatability and likability.
There's also an obvious comparison to make. Harry Kane is white and Sterling is not. Harry Kane looks like what a typical English white lad looks, or should look like, quote unquote. Sterling does not. Sterling is the more accomplished footballer, barely gets the respect that he deserves. And this has happened because Sterling just wanted to have a better life for himself, just wanted to stand out, and just wanted to make sure that he could take care of himself and make sure that there weren't any risks. I think this is one of the reasons why he went to Manchester City.
No. If Raheem Sterling had done what Rashford had done, I honestly feel there would have been more calls for, oh, well, he's a millionaire, why didn't he do more?
Exactly.
I
agree with that.
I feel that would have been more the angle of it versus... And I believe both them... Rashford and Sterling have kind of a similar in terms of not being particularly affluent and when they were younger. Like, I think they have similar stories in that regard. Maybe even the same as single parent homes, actually. I'm not quite sure with that. But yeah, they're very similar upbringings in that regard. So it would make total sense had Sterling gone out and done something similar. But yeah, it would have been a case of, why didn't he do more, as opposed to, isn't it brilliant he's doing
exactly.
It's very interesting the way that just two very similar individuals treated so massively differently in the UK media. It's,
don't forget Sterling's previous words that he doesn't trust anyone who smiles at his face anymore. Now, personally, I've heard this refrain before from young people who have had a tough life growing up. They have a hard time trusting. And we as a society have a role to play in that. We shouldn't forget that. But I do want to go back to this idea of class struggle that a lot of people face when they are an up-and-coming footballer. And the football boys that Scott mentions at the top of the show. You know, not all of them must have made it to the big leagues. Hell, I don't think any of them did. So what then? What happens to the lottery ticket? What happens to those dashed expectations? This is a question that's in a lot of people's minds after the death of Jeremy Winston. This is a question that is in a lot of people's minds after the death of Jeremy Winston, a young player who killed himself after he's told he would be released from his club. Jeremy, another immigrant who came to England when he was a baby from Malawi, was 17 years of age when he killed himself.
There's a great story done by Joe Sports entitled, quote, Cast Adrift, How Football is Failing Released Academy Players by Simon Lloyd. And it details the life of an academy player, usually 16 or 17 years of age, when they are told that their parent club would release them. The dreams of playing in the Premier League were dashed, and how that club treats its players after that has happened is shameful. Quote, for a boy with aspirations of becoming a professional footballer, the reminders of just how high the odds are stacked against you are near constant. Even those select few who reach the latter stages of the academy system know that only a tiny fraction of them will actually make it. None of this, though, makes it any easier for them to hear the news that their dream, one many have devoted half of their life to chasing, is over. Such a rejection can leave a mark, especially when set against all the additional complexities that come with being a teenage boy. End quote. This is a stark reminder that the players that play this game are usually young men, sometimes teenagers, and that for the most of their life, it's been about football. Their social life has been football. Their dreams have been about football, as well as their education. So, what does this have to do with masculinity? Well, if you listen to this show, you can tell that it's a lot. It has a lot to do with how men see sports as a way of how we see ourselves. How expectations that we have not only for ourselves, but for our teams, for our community, for our nation, for identity. We rise them up, but sometimes we destroy them. And also, it shows us how we view a specific type of masculinity, especially in regards to black masculinity. That we can look at Raheem Sterling and say, you have a specific type of masculinity that is not compatible, or is not quote-unquote good, compared to somebody like Marcus Rashford or Harry Kane or Trent Alexander-Arnold. All of these players should be celebrated for their uniqueness and difference, rather than rise them up so high and then dig them down so low that they could never see the center. This is important to understand, that when we rise up these young men, we need to be supporting them as well. These are teenagers, these are young men, these are people in society that we use for our own entertainment. And that's a view that sometimes is hard to kind of come to grips to, but it's something that is really important to understand. We don't want any more Jeremy Whistons. We don't want any more people killing themselves because someone told them that their dream has died when they were 17 years of age. We must show them the world is much more than just football. We must also show them that community is considered a family and not someone that's going to bring you down. We need to understand why Raheem Sterling comes up just as much as why as Marcus Rashford comes up, and also understand that these two peoples, these backgrounds, are creating much more for society as well. Marcus Rashford, knowing from his past that he wanted to help people in the future. He knew from a young player that he needed, if he ever become famous, that he really needed to help people out. And Raheem Sterling, from his experience, he wanted to speak out against the honestly awful tabloid media that happens in England. And he's done that. Raheem Sterling is a very accomplished footballer. Marcus Rashford is also a very accomplished footballer. Same as any one of these players. The last thing you want is another journalist. So make sure you treat your players right. And make sure that you celebrate people like we're doing today. This time.
Rashford has won. Beaten Ward. Rashford in the area. Pulls it across goal. On the start. 1-0 in just the second minute. Juan Mata, his first goal of the season. It's what Crystal Palace must have dreaded. United 1, Palace 0.
Great play by Rashford. Pace and skill to get to that dead ball line. When you get a dead ball line, it's the worst ball for any defender as the ball played back to it.
So the Lito's dash. So back to Raheem Sterling. Sterling away from Adrian. He has rolled it in so neatly. So neatly.
Morella. Mata goes in. 1-0. A life-changing 3 days for Marcus Rashford. European and now Premier League debut goals. Great credit to Mata, Morella, Morella, but then 18-year-old Marcus Rashford. It's De Bruyne. It's a brilliant ball. Sterling. 4-0. City in dreamland. Liverpool enduring a nightmare. What a game this has been for City.
That's a hell of a ball if he keeps in. Ball from win.
Rashford waits in the centre. Valencia towards Rashford. This kid's dynamite. Valencia did really well down the right hand side. And Rashford is there once again for his seventh goal of the season. 1-0.
Oh, in goes Sterling. He's done it. Within 90 seconds of the restart, Raheem Sterling gets his first City goal. And just look what it means to him.
Looking to Rashford. Manchester's finest equalises in stoppage time at the end of the first half. Dels poor defending. Rashford's unerring finish. 1-1. De Bruyne. It's Raheem Sterling.
That wins titles. Raheem Sterling is the host of the Late Late Show again for Manchester City. And if they are to lift the Premier League trophy high in May, that could be a pivotal moment that they look back upon. Well, when time is up, he just does it time after time after time this season.
That was our show for today. Wanted to say a big thank you to my buddy Scott for providing the extra commentary on this episode. It was a pleasure to be able to talk to him about soccer. It's just something that we do every single week anyway, so might as well record it. If you want to hear more Mar Manhood content, go to patreon.com/marmanpod and sign up for a $3 tier to get access to Modern Manhood Extra. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time on Mar Manhood.